You are listening to the Zen Nova Scotia podcast with talks by Cone Franz. These talks are made possible in part by generous donations from our listeners. To find out how to support and take part in our community, visit zennovascotia.com.
We have a lot of language culturally around the process of self-discovery or of figuring out who we want to be. Right? We tell people, oh, you should go travel and find yourself. Right? And we assume that people, especially at a certain age, are wrestling with the kind of person they want to become. Right? And I think a lot of that comes down to a lot of details. What's your job? Where are you going to put some of your efforts? But in broad strokes, and this isn't true of everyone, I think that most people basically know what kind of person they want to be. That's not the hard part. So if you had asked me in college, do you want to be kind or unkind? I would have said, well, I want to be kind. I knew that. I didn't really need some profound process of self-discovery to arrive at that conclusion. But even then, I understood the interesting question isn't, do you want to be this or this? The interesting question is, if you want to be this, why aren't you that? You say you want to be kind, but you're not always kind. Why? Do you want to be selfless, or do you want to be selfish? Well, I want to be selfless. Well, why is that so hard? If I know that that's what I want, when something is in front of me to be done, do I want to be the kind of person who just dives in with a lot of energy and makes it happen, or do I want to just be lazy? Well, it's the former. So why am I so often the latter? That's the interesting question for most of us. We've got certain things figured out. And yet we know that not all of our thoughts and words and actions are in alignment with those things. So maybe we investigate. Or maybe we just beat ourselves up. Maybe we kind of pathologize it. Maybe we come to the conclusion that even though we'd like to be that, we're not really that. So we can never, because that's not how it's going. Maybe we give in at some point to what seems like a path of less resistance. I heard a quote today that I really loved, and I don't have it written down in front of me, but I want to share it with everybody because it's relevant in my mind. It said, Satori. Satori is enlightenment. We imagine that it's this moment that illuminates everything. But in fact, it's like losing your mother in a department store forever. That's so good. So I want to unpack that a little bit. First, this first part, the thing that we want it to be. We want this moment that makes everything clear. We're waiting for it. We can say we're not waiting for it, but there's a good chance that we're waiting for it. And maybe we don't call it Satori. Maybe we don't call it enlightenment. But just like last week, we talked about the idea of being trapped. And I asked, in what way do you feel trapped? This is another way of talking about the same thing. It's, what are you waiting for? What's the thing that you think might be on the horizon? Maybe, if things are aligned just right, that will make the things that are hard now not so hard. Now, this could become a big conversation, and people, well, it's the QE2. You know, it's the lottery. It's something like that. But internally, I think we have something else, too. This idea that maybe it doesn't have to feel this way all the time. Maybe it doesn't have to be hard all the time. I was interviewed recently by someone writing a book about American Zen. And one of the questions that he asked was, how do you describe Kensho? Kensho is another word that gets used for these enlightenment experiences that people have. And my first response was, well, I don't. We don't really talk about that so much. But I said, if I had to, I would say it's like a belch of the mind. You know, I have two kids. And one of the things about babies, of course, babies have to burp. They have to, and they don't have the physical process lined up, right? It's really hard for them, so they get these bubbles. And they feel terrible. They just feel so bad. And they cry, and you know, this is, you know, there are only a few things that could be wrong with a baby at any given time, so it's often this. And so you devise all these techniques. I'm really good at burping babies. Really good. I always wish that strangers would let me try. Because I spent so much time developing this skill. I got so good at it, but no one ever hands me a baby anymore. It's like so many things. One day you burp a baby for the last time, but you don't know it's the last time. And then you look back 6 months later and you, oh, I'll never get to do that again. I was great at that. But it's beautiful. You know, the baby really needs it. And you get really good, you get these techniques, and it's kind of aggressive. You know, you're smacking them, and you're kind of working their legs, and you have all these little things that you do, and then something releases. And it's so great, because when it happens, everything's better, right? The baby's just, and they smile. And the whole thing is just erased. All the suffering that happened before that is erased. And sometimes it just happens on its own, because they're sitting well in their chair or whatever, they're struggling, and then you hear it across the room. It's so cute. And then they're better. It's just done. Right? We read the literature of this tradition in particular. We read the koans, and we imagine that one of maybe two things will happen. Right? Either a teacher is going to say exactly the right thing at exactly the right time, because that seems to happen all the time in these stories. Right? And that will be the statement that unties all the knots. And everything lets go in that moment. The world drops out. And you can breathe. Everything has changed. Or the other thing that happens in koan stories is that someone is left alone in their high chair, right? They're struggling, and they can't get there, and it seems hopeless. And then one day they're sweeping, and a rock hits a piece of bamboo and it makes a sound, and you hear the sound just right. And when you hear that sound, it's just like the teacher saying the right thing. Everything drops away. And you're fine. But the thing is that when you burp a baby, you haven't then resolved its digestive process for the rest of its life. You just gave it space to breathe, right? It's a little reset button. It's really nice. You'd wish it on anyone to have that experience. And in the same way, this thing that we think we want, it can happen, you know. Sometimes someone does say the right thing. Or more often, we're just in the right frame of mind to see things in a bigger way for a moment than we did before. But there's a kind of myth or a kind of disease, a kind of trap, where we imagine that there's some experience like that that awaits us, and that when that happens, the obstacles will be gone. Right? Why am I not generous all the time, even though I want to be generous? Well, it's because there are these obstacles, the obstacles of my mind. Something is going to come and release those obstacles. The moment will come. That's why I'm here. That's why I'm practicing. That's why I bow. That's why I sit. I'm preparing myself. And when it comes, I won't feel so split. There won't be this gap between who I want to be and who I am. Right? It'll just naturally fall together because I will have let go that contraction. Right? That holding tight. That will fall away because that's what's been holding me back. I want to circle back to this quote. It said, it's not this magical moment that illuminates everything. It's like losing your mother in a department store forever. What is that like? Right? This analogy isn't perfect. Right? Because we naturally bring this kind of sense of panic to that. That's not it. But two things come to mind for me when I hear this. Two things made it feel brilliant. One, if you've ever had that moment as a child, my son had it just the other day. We were in a store and he started walking behind the wrong person. You know, it happens. And then you look up and you're, oh, where are they? Right. It only took a few seconds, but there's that moment that's that completely confused, unsettled space of I'm not where I thought I was. I'm not with who I thought I was. In that moment, you're so awake, right? You're looking everywhere. You're looking with every cell in your body for your mom or for your dad. Nothing is taken for granted in that moment. It's so aware. Now again, the analogy isn't perfect because it's so focused too. It's so narrow. You're looking for one thing in this big space. But still, you're as far from sleep as you could be. But then the other is the forever. In that analogy, you never get peace. It never gets resolved. You're just awake. And awake and awake. And in that awakeness, you're raw. I don't know if that's what anybody wants, based on this elevator pitch of it. But that's kind of what's on offer. All of this is a kind of meandering way to say or to offer that the thing that we're waiting for, whatever that is, the thing that we think is going to come and untie the knot, it's never going to come. Even if it comes for a second, it didn't arrive. Not in the way we hoped. And so practice becomes, how do I say this? Practice rests in this very simple question of what do I do now that I know it's not coming? What do I do now that I know that no one's going to save me? If I want to engage in awakened activity, if I want to be awake in the world, if I want to be kind, if I want to be generous, if I want to offer myself, how do I do it? Once I've come to terms with the idea that it will never get easier than it is now, that no one will ever open a door for me that I thought was closed. No extra set of lights will come on. This, to me, is where things really come alive. Because it points back to the fundamental principle that everything right now is enough. There is no missing piece. There is no ingredient that we lack. There is nothing behind the curtain that's going to change the fundamental problem. And that means we can address it now. I'm aware that all the things that sound the most exciting to me about Buddhism and about the Dharma and about practice also happen to sound like bad news. But for me, to look at this honestly, for me to stand on my own two feet, I have to remind myself always not to pull the rug out from myself exactly, but to look down and remember there is no rug. There never was. That's the starting place of every day. And tomorrow I'll need to remind myself of this again. I'll stop there.
For more information about Zen, our practice, and how you can support and take part in our community, please visit zennovascotia.com.